Good afternoon and welcome to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd with you every Wednesday noon to 1 o'clock here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for making us a priority and tuning in or listening to us online at kkfi.org. Another fun-filled, a room full of creative, talented people here at the studio today. I've got Warren Rosser, Ben Elvers, Louis Copt, Jillian Helm, John Teasdale, and Brent Watkinson, all ready to talk to you about what's happening in the creative world here in Kansas City, Missouri. So, hope you enjoy this program because, you know, it's all about local Kansas City creative community. There you go. So I want to start off first with Warren Rosser, who is the William T. Kemper Distinguished Professor of Painting, and he recently retired as chair of the painting department at the Kansas City Art Institute after 28 years. He was born in South Wales in the UK and moved to the U.S. in 1972. Now, although he was trained as a painter for many years, he made sculpture and mixed media constructions. He returned in 98 to painting and views it in the broadest sense. So his work continues to explore constructed elements that exist on the wall, but just as easily on the floor. So I want to say welcome to my friend Warren Rosser. Hello.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. You know, you've had just a really wonderful, illustrious career at the Art Institute. And as a side note, when I was considering going to the Art Institute, I started off in continuing education class, a drawing class that you taught, and I fell in love with the drawing too. So, you know, recently you had a talk, I believe it was January 7th, at the Kansas City Library downtown, the Central Library at 14 West 10th Street, and there were so many things to talk about. You talked about your present practice, materials, sculpture as construction, and drawing in space. Give us a little background about the work also that's featured there at the Central Library through April 9th, which is Sunday. It's currently there at the Central Library, 14 West 10th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. So talk about some of the work that folks will see there at that location.
Yeah, one of the things that was particularly interesting for me about that show was the location to put an exhibition on, and they have quite a nice little gallery there.
Yeah.
Was a sort of a different environment, a different group of people coming to the space and discovering work. The other aspect of it that was interesting, the show was about being awarded the Charlotte Street a number of years ago, in fact, 20 years ago. And I wanted to do a show that tracked the work from that period.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting to sort of curate a small show that covered the different periods from, you know, printmaking, constructions I made with fabric.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see that. I mean, I've known your work, but I guess I just hadn't seen them in person, really. And so that was really exciting to see that and hear you talk about it.
Yeah, I think the fabric pieces were interesting for me because rather than using paint, I went out and bought fabric. And it caused me to sort of think about how you organize surfaces and how you organize mm-hmm. space in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of gave me different challenges to think about in the work.
Yeah. I know during your talk, again, at the public library, you mentioned that there was a concussion that you experienced in the studio that led you back to 2D painting, and then your forms sort of became larger and more elliptical than that. Also, I want to mention, and if you would talk to this, about the dialogue with Dwight Frizzell on some of your pieces, on your work, Counterpoint.
Yeah, actually, that's been an interesting sort of collaboration. I was doing a show out at the Epstein Gallery, and I was creating some very large paintings, and I wanted to create an environment that sort of filled the space. And I was searching for a title for the show, and I thought of this word counterpoint. And at that moment, I thought of Dwight, and that began this long collaboration where he created a piece of music based on the paintings, and then that sort of was protracted itself into a series of collaborations. And at this talk at the downtown library, he did the latest iteration of translating a couple of paintings of mine, where he's really trying to focus on color as sound,
mm-hmm.
and how sound and color have always had a curious relationship.
And I loved how that developed, because then you also have that sound and you have those cues that that help you form the image, the color, in the palette, you know, in your mind. Beautiful. But I should mention that you've also done some other collaborations, prints with poems with Harvey Hicks and all. Is that a challenge, collaborating with folks? How does that work for you?
I think for me, it just gives me a different set of questions to react to. And when I did this collaboration with Harvey, where he wrote a series of poems and I did a series of monoprints, it was interesting because, again, words and the sound of words and the sound of color and the sort of form of color, it sort of interwove into a series of exhibitions that was here in Kansas City, in the UK, in a number of locations, both in the States and in Europe. And that became an ongoing sort of interest of mine to mm-hmm. find people that brought something of theirs to the table that I could interact with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about some of the work in Europe, climbing up space. You talked about that during your talk. It was a commission piece, and that was where your palette became more subtle during that time. And was that for work in England?
No, that actually was a piece I did here for the Selvgrave.
Okay.
And it was a sort of collaborative piece where it was like working with the architect.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was such a unique space because it was extremely vertical. So I made a series of four 16-foot paintings. And because it was such a subtle, wonderful space, my palette up until that point had been really high-key color.
Mm-hmm.
So for this particular project, I started to break the color into subtle grays and really became like a new direction for the work that followed.
Yeah. So if you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Warren Rosser. He is the William T. Kemper Distinguished Professor of Painting, recently retired. Recently, is this a little bit older? Or am I up to date? How long ago was it that you retired?
I retired as chair. I'm still teaching.
Uh-huh.
I teach a couple of days a week, and I really still love the interaction with students. They keep you honest. They keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really treasure. And I think next year will actually be my last year of teaching.
You won't be able to stay away. And you know, as we talked about your work, we've gone. I've mentioned the Ha Contemporary Gallery. HaContemporary.com is the website, and you show your work through them, or are they one of the galleries that handles?
I recently started working with Bill. My show earlier this year was the first show of paintings with him.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I did a small show of prints.
Mm-hmm. Because primarily that's what you started out as, was a printmaker, right? Or am I making up stuff now?
No, it's been a bit of both.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And today, the relationship of printmaking to painting for me is a real crucial one.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm making prints, and I now have a press in my own studio mm-hmm. that I can use, I see color in a different way, and it helps sort of color function because you're mixing inks, basically, and you don't see the end result until you peel the print off.
Mm-hmm.
You get these wonderful surprises of sort of color fusions, and that becomes like a way of informing the paintings.
But as professor at the Art Institute, do you see printmaking as your students finding interest in it, or are they going more towards a digital sort of media?
I think digital seems to be the sort of go-to,
yeah.
I think because it's so accessible. I try to dissuade them, which is not very successful, but I try to get them, if they're interested in imagery, whether it's a painting or a print, go and see the actual work. Don't just see the image represented digitally, because the body of the work is a little different than what the projected image looks like. And I think digital information is a great tool, because you can access information right away.
But do you yourself, do you have a love-hate relationship with the digital sort of media? Because, it sounds as though you're very tactile, you're very hands-on with your work. So with digital media, it's a different animal.
Yeah, for me, the digital is sort of, it creates a distance.
Yeah.
And for me, the actual painting or printing, it is about a physicality. It is about an actual surface that you manipulate in.
Mm-hmm.
But I do use the digital element. I might, when I'm in the middle of a painting and I'm not sure where to go with certain directions, I might actually Photoshop it and do some sort of adjustments. And then, of course, you have to take it back and, translate it into painting terms. But it is a good tool.
So you've got painting and printmaking and sculpture, and what direction are you headed from here? Are you still sort of discovering something from your last body of work, or?
Yeah, the last painting I did for the show at Bill Hawes actually had some curvilinear forms in it, and it's the first time I've used sort of curved forms for quite a while, and I'm pretty excited about sort of trying to find out where that can take me.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's nice to sort of return to the studio. When you do shows, as exciting as they are, they can be very disruptive.
Yeah.
So it's nice to go back to the studio and start sort of processing a new body of work. And I'm also going to do a new print this summer with a new printmaker in town. So I'm looking forward to working with some lithography.
And I have to ask you this. Is there any interest in animation? Because with your work, which has been sometimes kinetic, and then your work with Dwight, which was audio, would you ever consider doing some sort of animated piece? And not like a cartoon, but just forms and shapes and shifting. And let me fill it out for you.
I never say never, but yeah. I can't imagine doing that at this point.
Yeah.
There's still so many. The thing I try to tell the students, it doesn't matter how long you've been making work. There's so many questions you haven't answered yet. And that's really what I'm interested in, is trying to find out what I don't know.
Beautiful.
And seeing where that sort of takes me.
And I should also mention that Warren's had selected solo exhibitions at the University of Leeds in England, here in Kansas City, St. Louis. He's also had his work in Omaha, Nebraska, the Tate Gallery in London, Germany, Venice, Italy, Scotland, you name it, he's been there.
It's been an interesting journey.
It's been, yeah. Well, maybe you'll work on your biography.
What's that?
Maybe you'll work on your biography next.
We'll see.
Well, Warren, we talked about contact information or a website, and so if you want to tell listeners anything about
that. My website right now is down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the process of trying to get it reconstructed. But there's a lot of images of my work on the Hoare Contemporary website. And if you get the opportunity, my show is still up at the downtown library.
Right.
Until
Sunday, April 9th.
April the 9th.
Yeah. And that's the Central Library at 14 West 10th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. KCLibrary.org is their website. HaContemporary.com for more images of Warren's work. Any last words that you want to leave our listeners with, my friend?
Well, we live in a great city that has a great tradition for the visual arts and other creative endeavors. So I really appreciate what Maria is doing, and let's continue this journey.
Terrific. Thank you so much, my friend. Now get back to the Art Institute. Don't be so hard on those kids at Crits.
Right, I have to go back to Crits. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio right after this. You're listening to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, Wednesdays, noon to one, with you on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Sorry I didn't get that call while I was interviewing. There was a call for Warren about woodblock prints. So just give me a call back later and I'll be happy to talk with you. Next up, I've got Ben Alvers and Lewis Kopp with the Lawrence Art Center. The Lawrence Art Center is a public and private partnership. It's been established by artists in 1981 to fund many contemporary exhibitions, film, lectures, performing arts, and all. So we're going to talk to Ben Alvers, who is the gallery director, and Lewis Kopp, who is the featured artist for the Lawrence Art Center's auction that's taking place. It's a live auction on April 8th at 5 o'clock at the Lawrence Art Center at 940 New Hampshire Street. So we're going to talk a bit about the auction. So welcome, Ben. Welcome, Lewis.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great. So I love the Lawrence Art Center. It's just a really beautiful facility, and I hope that it stays strong for a long time. Right now, you're getting ready for this auction. So let's talk about that, Ben.
Well, sure. The benefit auction's been in place for almost longer than I've been alive. It's a tradition.
I love that.
It's the primary funding source for the exhibitions program, which is free and open to the public 7 days a week. We have about 25 exhibitions throughout a year. And this year, the annual benefit auction, we have about 170 pieces ranging from, you know, small, inexpensive to some pretty hefty pieces of work, and along with that, there's been a tradition of having what's called a featured artist, and Louis, we're lucky enough to have Louis serve as the featured artist. So he had an exhibition that opened up early January and just ended at the end of February, and I think he has six paintings in the exhibition. And the exhibit is up right now. It's been up since, when did that open? Mid-March?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, March 10th.
There you go. And then it'll culminate on April the 8th, which is when the live auction takes place.
Terrific. Right. I mean, it sounds like so many people are going to support this. I mean, the artists certainly have so far,
for
with
sure.
that many participating. And so you also, I want to mention that there's the online bidding that's taking place too, right?
Correct. At LawrenceArtCenter.org.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, all the pieces are featured on the website. You can go there anytime, and you can bid through the website. You can also come and see it in person, just as Warren was talking about seeing work in the flesh. It's important. But yeah, it's all on there.
And I called you Louis. Louis?
That's fine.
We're friends.
We're friends. We're all friends.
Louis, fine.
So you are the featured artist for this auction. And I should say that you have exhibited all over. Your work has been shown in galleries throughout the Midwest. The Leopold Gallery, Strecker Nelson Gallery in Kansas. All over the place. You've got quite a bit of
work. Yeah, I've been at it for quite a while.
Yeah. So tell us about your work.
The work that I'm having in this exhibition that's featured in the Art Auction this year is a series of barn paintings that I've been working on for probably about the last 8 or 9 months. And I've had a rural background here in Kansas, and the barns really are very symbolic to me. About the rural lifestyle, the rural agriculture, and just the importance of what the barn means to rural families. And so the barns that I have in the exhibition are basically three themes. One is barns by moonlight, barns with kind of stormy skies, and then barns as symbols, just kind of the barn shape boiled down to symbolic.
Well, and the lighting, the nighttime barns are very magical.
Yeah, it's I'm just fascinated by moonlight. Yeah, and yeah. I just find it a challenge to try to paint moonlight. I was really inspired by the George Ault painting that's at the Nelson Atkins Museum.
Yes, yeah,
it's one of my favorite paintings.
Yeah, and I can tell you that the tickets are available. I can't give you the prices, but the lawrenceartcenter.org is where you'll find that information. But, you know, it's great to have original work on your walls, in your home, in your, you know, wherever, and support the arts community, right?
Right,
yeah. It's, I think, the auction, to me, I mean, there are art auctions all over the planet, and they range. I think what's unique about this one is, and what I strive to do with curating it, is that it needs to be reflective of what we do throughout a year. So we're showing emerging artists, we're showing artists who have a ton of experience, like Louis, and I think it's really important that we don't rely on a certain type of work or a certain medium.
Yeah.
I think having that variety, I think, is really what is our strength. It is our strength, and so I want to strive towards that. And I think I've been doing, this is my seventh one with the Lawrence Art Center. The quality of work that the artists contribute is astounding. Each year it gets better. The artists are engaged and the audience is engaged, and it really, I mean, ultimately it's a benefit for the program, and that's what everybody's focused on, I believe.
Well, and I do want to tell our listeners that the Art Center employs over 120 teaching artists whose careers observe the Kennedy Center standards for visual and performing arts. 10,000 students take courses annually, and the Art Center greets about 200,000 visitors each year. So that's an important place in the community.
It's really an amazing place. And I've taught at the Lawrence Art Center for many years, and I teach oil media and also water media, and I just love being engaged with the people that come through the building. And you know, I just think it's part of the duty as an artist to share and
cultivate the next generation of
exactly.
artists.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Ben Elvers and Louis
Copt.
We're talking about the Lawrence Art Center and the Lawrence Art Center annual art auction that takes place Friday,
April 8th.
Yeah, that just escaped me. LawrenceArtsCenter.org is the website for more information, and that's at 940 New Hampshire Street, Lawrence, Kansas. Now, Ben, you began your role as gallery director at the Lawrence Art Center back in 2009.
Yeah.
So tell us what's currently, aside from the auction that's going to take place, what do you have on the walls? What's up at the gallery? What's going on?
We kind of clear the decks for this auction.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, there are some annual exhibitions, and this is one of them, the annual art auction. Following this will be, you know, the public school. We have the USD 497 Lawrence Public School exhibition. That'll happen the second half of April. And then we have artists in residence at the Art Center, and so they have their you know, sort of exit exhibition. But, you know, we just finished a round. Louis had a really terrific show in our large gallery. We have three primary gallery spaces there, and we had his exhibition. We had a photography exhibition of some Lawrence photographers, and then we had a guy named Daniel Rosen, who created we had 450 stuffed penguins that were all on motors. That was a wild success.
Quite a popular show. Very popular.
And I think, again, having a diverse range of artists, medium approaches to art making, I think, is really something that I'll always be aiming for. And so you got to stay tuned, because there's always something different. And a lot of the artists that you'll see represented in the exhibition have either exhibited or will be exhibiting in the near future.
And I think it's really important to have a strong arts community, because maybe Kansas City, Lawrence, Kansas, maybe they're not the first that come to your mind when you think about the arts
and
you know, the impact that it makes.
Sure.
But we have some really a terrific community here in Kansas City and Lawrence.
Absolutely.
So, and I want to talk to you, Louis. So you have some work that's coming up that you wanted to talk
about?
Yeah,
I'm going to be in a couple of group shows that are coming up soon. One of those is going to be at the Strecker Nelson Gallery in Manhattan. It's called Other Worlds, and it opens on April 7th, which is the night before the art auction, so I'm going to be in Manhattan then. And then I have another show. I show at the Leopold Gallery here in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's going to be a group show that's opening on April 14th at the Leopold Gallery.
And that's in Brookside, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. How did, you know, so let me see. I see that you've been painting full-time since 1984.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges that what are some of the things that inspire you to create?
Oh, that's a great question. I guess I just don't have a hard problem being motivated. There's just so much to see and do, and just a natural curiosity that I think artists have.
Yeah.
And I just try to nurture that, and I think teaching also helps, you know, because you engage with students, and I feel that when you teach, you actually learn as well.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. So I think it's great, and I really like to help younger artists kind of get established and give encouragement for them to choose this path as an artist, because a lot of times, like we were talking earlier out in the
green room,
the green room there, you were saying how artists, you know, seem to be like exotic creatures or something, but we're not. We're just pretty normal people, but, you know, we might see the world in a little different
and we're up
angle
late, all hours
or
of
whatever
the night.
Like that, you know, and we like to make things and create things and, you know, get paint on ourselves. And
well, yeah, and I like to ask that question of artists because I think it gives folks who are not artists a little bit of insight to, you know, gosh, you know, what is that like? You know, what do they read? What do they look at? What do they experience in their world that's different?
Well, you know, art impacts every bit of our lives, whether we realize it or not. You know, whether you see a good design in a cup, whether you see a good design in a building, whether you see art on a wall, it's part of our landscape. It's part of our life. And, you know, it's important that artists really become involved and just become a whole part of the process.
You're right.
And
especially,
are valued.
Well, especially right now with the threat of the NEA being cut.
Exactly.
And people think, oh, you don't need the arts. Well, think about it.
I know.
About the movies you've seen or the music that you've listened to. And, you know, I won't make that argument because, you know, I'm preaching to the choir.
Right. Exactly.
But it can change lives. A lot of artists have said it's changed either their lives or the lives of folks that they've worked with. So.
Yes.
It matters. It matters. So, Ben, let's talk about getting people riled up for this Lawrence Arts Auction of April 8th, right?
April the 8th.
April 8th.
All night.
Yeah.
It's a pretty wild event. It's you know, I think the doors open at 5, and it's catered to the nines, and there's no shortage of things to hold in your hands to drink.
Sure,
and,
sure. You can say liquor.
Yeah, there's a lot of booze there.
Well, and again, I mentioned that tickets are available at the lawrenceartscenter.org. Mm-hmm. But if someone just wanted to show up that night, will they be able to purchase a ticket?
You can buy a ticket at the door, but it's more expensive, so get it in advance.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Or come right now. You know, the galleries are open. Of the 170-ish pieces that are in this exhibition, 40 of them will be in the live auction, and so those are reserved for April the 8th. The other 130 pieces can be bid on right now. They can actually be bought out at 200% of their retail, and we've probably had a couple dozen of those already sold out at 200%.
Now, any of this on the website?
All of it's on the website.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, good.
It's all... It's all almost up to date because I had to drive to Kansas City, so I didn't get to update the website yet, but it will be by the end of the day. But like I mentioned earlier, it's such a range of things that, you know, jewelry that's really inexpensive and really cool. And then you have, you know, artists like Roger Shimomura, who has a painting, Louis Comte.
Yeah.
A lot of ceramics.
There's a Grandma Layton lithograph.
Yep.
Artists like Stephen Powers, who's an artist out of New York City, who was in an exhibition that I curated last fall, Michael Krieger, Archie Gobber.
There's some names out there.
Yeah, it spans Kansas City and Lawrence. It's primarily Lawrence, but I think if you don't know much about the Art Center's exhibition program, this is a good sliver of what we do throughout a year. It's quite a range of artworks.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for both coming in today and talking to us about the art and the auction. Thanks so much, and I hope you get a lot of really good bids.
You bid early and bid often.
Yeah, you bet.
Come on out.
We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, two takes at a movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is a British drama starring Oscar winner Jim Broadbent, and it's called The Sense of an Ending.
Which could also be titled The Sense of a Beginning, because there are so many flashbacks and memories, elderly characters, and their younger character counterpart. I mean, it's quite convoluting and tedious as it plays out.
Broadbent plays the old man who is bequeathed a diary in the will of his ex-girlfriend's mother. This is a woman that he hasn't had a relationship with for decades, and it becomes obsessed with finding out what this diary is, who wrote it, and why it's been bequeathed to him.
So there's a little bit of interest in finding that out for the audience. And I guess finding out that reason for him changes his way of relating to other people.
You know, I don't suppose that I should be this picky about it, but one of the problems I had with this film is that the young actors who play the young Broadbent and the young Rampling counterparts don't look anything like them.
It was hard to follow, yes.
Yeah, and so it's like, are we really sure these are the same people?
Exactly.
But the plot is kind of interesting and it's intricate. The only downside from my perspective is that it's so predictable. I think the audience has figured this out way before the characters do, and that causes it to drag just a little bit. But I got to give props to the cast, both the young and the older cast. They're all very good. And the movie, it did keep my interest.
Did it? Mm-hmm. Well, the dialogue was well done, but I found the characters not very interesting after all, to me.
I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, in her new book, Chow Chop Suey, food historian Anne Mendelson traces the history of the Chinese in America through food in Chinese restaurants. It's a story of how xenophobia stunted the enrichment of both our society and cuisine. Then, going to the polls on April 4th? Confused about the 1/8-cent sales tax? Listen to both sides and decide for yourself. Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd here live at the 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio Station. Yay! Next up, I have Executive Director Jillian Helm and Deputy Director Chief Development Officer John Teasdale with Literacy KC. Now, Literacy KC began as a dream and grew out of a passion to help people. In 1985, a group of volunteers led by Catherine Matthews perceived a need, created a tiny organization to provide literacy tutoring for adults. Now, they had become aware of several adults that struggled with literacy skills and felt that there was an answer to help them gain new skills and improve on limited skills they had had. So we're going to talk about the program that Literacy KC offers. There's so many things that they offer, and then we're going to end up and talk about their KC, Literacy KC spelling bee. So welcome, Jillian and John.
Thank you.
Very good. So Literacy KC has been around since 85.
It has. We are a 31-year-old organization now, but I think Catherine Matthews and those who started the organization would be very surprised and very pleased at how far we've been able to come in the last few years. We've really been on a wonderful growth trajectory, being able to serve more in better, more innovative, more science-based, research-driven ways than ever before. And we're just really excited to be here today, so thanks.
You bet. Now, is your staff all volunteer-based?
No, we actually started out that way with a one-to-one tutoring model, but a few years ago we transformed into a classroom-based approach and really started taking sort of the whole student into consideration, and we call it a community literacy model. And so we do have paid staff that are instructors, but we use those volunteers in a very critical way to support that classroom instruction, to provide that individualized component that's so critical in learning how to read.
So, John, if people are interested in getting involved or need some help with through Literacy Casey, how do they reach you, and what do they need to do first?
The best way to find us is through our website, which is literacykc.org. If there are people out there who might be able to utilize our services, we certainly encourage them to check out our website. Or they can call our phone number at
816-333-9332.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and the programs are not just for adults, right?
No, we actually have, so our core program is 16 and over, mm-hmm. And then we have a career online high school program as well, that where we offer scholarships for students to get a high school diploma all online, as well as an attached career certificate. And then to address that multi-generational issue of illiteracy or low literacy, we offer a family reading program that's called Let's Read, and we do that through partnerships with housing authority sites, local schools, and libraries.
That's great. And Literacy Casey is located at 211 West Armour Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri, and literacykc.org is the website. I see that, you know, what I've read about Literacy Casey, that with support from volunteers, donors, partners, and the community at large, it invests in Kansas City's greatest asset, the people, our people.
That's exactly right, yeah. And that's something we preach over and over again, which is it really is an investment that pays off. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I mean, just the other day, one of our big national affiliate partners put out a big study about the value in investing in adult literacy, and it says things like, you know, for every 100 hours that someone is able to spend in a program like this, their increased ability to increase their income, to improve their health, all sorts of things. I mean, it just has a ripple effect in every area of life.
Now, if folks are wanting to get involved in terms of maybe volunteer or some sort of a role with Literacy Casey, do they just visit the website?
Yeah, they can find all that information to volunteer, to donate time, to donate money. We are a nonprofit and do rely on the generosity of folks to support us and our students. And all that is at literacykc.org. And we welcome anyone to reach out with us and be part of the exciting work that we do.
Beautiful. Also, let's talk about that Literacy Casey spelling bee, because that looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. That's taking place Friday, April 28th, right?
It is. This is our 23rd annual Spelling Bee, and we have companies around the city by teams, and then the teams spell off in a live Spelling Bee with each other. We also have a live and silent auction. Dinner, drinks. We have signature cocktails called the Stinger. It's really a fun party, and it celebrates, you know, all of the good that we do in the community.
And really, 100% of the proceeds helps Casey's families learn to read and write, do math, use computers and email so they can achieve their potential and realize their dreams. So sponsoring a team to participate in the Spelling Bee, and it's a real spelling bee, right?
It is absolutely a real spelling bee, and we actually have the 2015 Scripps Spelling Bee winner there as a potential lifeline, which teams can buy, and she'll come up and spell a word you're struggling with for you.
And I can tell you that's going to be held at the UMKC Pearson Auditorium Friday, April 28th. I don't have that address in front of me, but literacykc.org would give you all the details, right?
Yes, all that is through our website as well. Just click on the Spelling Bee, and all ticket sponsor auction information is on there, as well as date and time and location.
Yes, and you don't have to be in the Spelling Bee to attend the event. There's many, many other things you can do. Eat, drink, bid on the auction items, you know, just mingle and have fun with about 350 of Casey's great people.
And good food from local restaurants too, right? Yes.
Yeah, we have a lot of donations from local restaurants.
Yeah, so I'm talking to Literacy Casey Executive Director Jillian Helm, and Deputy Director, Chief Development Officer, Literacy KC, John Teasdale. And this is something that seems like it's going to be a lot of fun for a great cause, right?
It absolutely is, and it's going to really impact the lives of so many Kansas City citizens and our neighbors who, you know, this problem in Kansas City is so much more pervasive than people think that it is. And there are probably about 250,000 of people struggling with low literacy in our community. And if you think about that, I mean, it's hard to get a job, it's hard to get online, it's hard to really fully participate. And so by attending our event, by helping out, by volunteering, by doing what you can, you really support those people and help us invest in our community.
And I think the assumption is that everyone reads, and everyone reads at the same level of high skill and quality. So thank you for Literacy KC and the work that you do, because it helps us become better, more, you know?
It does, absolutely. All together.
Did that sound right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I just think any time that you could improve a person's life, my gosh, you know, that's priceless.
It is, and it's not just, you know, the nuts and bolts of reading. I mean, you watch the transformation just in you know, who our students are over time, and they just blossom and become really incredible people, and they're inspiring us every day.
A sense of pride in that, too. Very good. Do you have any last words that you want to leave our listeners with?
I would, again, just would like to thank you for having us on, and for anyone out there, if what you heard kind of struck a chord with what we do, our information is all at literacykc.org, and we welcome all emails, phone calls, all interest in helping our students go on to get jobs, get promotions. Mm-hmm. They read to their own kids, which builds a stronger Kansas City.
You know, and just one more thing I want to ask, too. So do you do... I should have asked this earlier. The work, is it done at the location at West Armor?
On West Armor. We actually have classes at our location, but we also take advantage of our community partner resources and have classes at community locations throughout the metro.
That's terrific. Thank you, John. Thank you so much, Jillian, for coming in, and the best of luck to the Spelling Bee.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio right after this. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. Wednesdays, oh, that's not part of my name. We're here with you every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. And up next, I have my old pal, my old buddy, Brent Watkinson. He's in the studio. He's going to talk about his career in two parts. So welcome, my friend, Brent Watkinson. Let's start off with saying hello.
Hi, Maria. I got a nice... note today from our very intelligent and creative friend in New York City, Mark Bischel, and he says hi.
Do we still hate him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. A guy that good looking.
We love our
smart.
Mark.
Yeah.
Bless
him.
His heart. You know, when I pulled up your information and all that, there was a couple of things that struck me. Again, I mentioned that your story, your career is in two parts. You began with your education at Missouri Southern State University. You've been an illustrator, educator, instructor, NASA arts program. You've been in that, astronaut, computer programming, and now you're a full-time painter. But one of the things that struck me was that in your statement, artist statement, you wrote, "I simply like making pictures that somehow persuade people to look at them for a while. No tricks, no gimmicks, nothing to hide behind. Just painting." I love that, Brent. Did you really say that?
I did. It came to me in a dream. No, I think that's what I've learned by being around a lot of people that are better artists and smarter than I am. And we all realize that painting is it's a collection of lies. You're not painting that pipe. This is not a pipe, as Magritte said. You're trying to give the illusion of something. And there were a group of people in the studio of Matisse years ago, and they were looking at paintings, and there were paintings leaning against the wall, this sort of thing. And one of the patrons walking through said, "You know what? The arm on this figure, on this woman, doesn't look right." And he said, "Well, it's not an arm on a woman, it's a painting."
I like that.
I mean, there has to be the word abstraction, I guess, is overused, but everything's an abstraction, I guess.
But, you know, I want to talk about your career in two parts. I'm really intrigued by that because, you know, it covers a lot of ground. Like I said, painter, illustrator, adjunct professor at the Kansas City Art Institute. In fact, that's where we met. Mm-hmm. And that other guy in New York.
The other guy.
Yeah. I love you, Mark. And also a full-time faculty member with the Illustration Academy. So take us through your story, the beginning, middle, and end.
I think when I was growing up, I wanted to make things. I always built things. I would take cereal from the cabinet and seeds and glue them down on paper and make weird things. And, of course, they went up on the refrigerator because that's what you do. And so I went to college and didn't understand how to make a living from it. Mm. So came to Kansas City, ran into some people and made myself a pest and got some good advice and figured out that you can make a living being creative. In my terms, it was making pictures, so I was an illustrator. When I was growing up, as a kid, in the space race, during the space race, I was very enamored with astronauts and rockets and the whole concept of everything going on. So when I became an illustrator, I approached NASA by mail, because this was a long time ago, and I said, hey, look, here's some 35-millimeter slides of my work.
35-millimeter
Yeah, that's how long ago that was. And I said, as a picture maker, as an illustrator, as an artist, anything I can do for you, let me know. I'm here for you. So 7 years later, after continually sending them things, Robert Schulman called my studio one day and said, hey, Brent, been watching your career a little bit. I've seen you're published here and here and this award, et cetera, et cetera. Would you like to come and see a launch at Cape Kennedy of the shuttle Endeavour, which is what they built to replace the Challenger. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, let me check my schedule. Uh-huh, yeah, I can do that. So I got to go down there and live for a week and paint and all that sort of thing and did two paintings for them over the next couple of years.
That's terrific. Now, see, I didn't know that about you, so I did find something out about you.
Nerd. I'm a nerd.
I know. Well, yeah. But you're a fun nerd. You've had many clients over the years as an illustrator, including the Franklin Mint, Time Warner, William Morrow Publishing, so on. I mean, there's such a huge list, and I don't know if I have that on the website. But also, again, you've been a part-time instructor at the Kansas City Art Institute, the Illustration Academy, and then also a computer programmer.
Being a nerd, I've always been what I call myself a closet programmer, and did a lot of web applications. And then I got a little bit more serious about it and started learning some of the heavier programming, just for fun. And then at some point, I got a little bit disenchanted with being an artist or a painter, I guess, and thought, well, one of the most creative things that I have done is computer programming. And a lot of people don't make that connection. computer programming is very creative. And I became an Apple licensed iPad and iPhone developer for 5 years, and during part of that time I was working for a national company based here in town writing code for them, and that was fantastic. I was surrounded by absolutely brilliant people, and like I say, I was the dumbest guy in the room, but I enjoyed being there. Companies get bought and sold, formats changed, and my job was basically eliminated. It's like nobody was going to be doing that job anymore. So I thought, okay, well, it's time to go back to painting, try to, you know, get back into the visual arts. And now I write computer programs that make basically geometric images that are projected either onto a screen or a wall, an exterior, or television, whatever. So I feel like now you can A, buy a painting from me, or B, you can buy this program and get billions and billions, just an infinity amount of images that this computer generates. I call it a handshake because tell the computer some things to do, and I say, hey, while you're at it, do some of your computer stuff, too. Do some of these random elements.
I understand that technology.
There you go.
Yeah, I really do. So for our listeners that are interested in finding more about that, how do they do you have a website for the information that they might seek?
I do. Right now, I have one website called BrentWatkinson.com, just my name.com. And there's a section on there called Code Art. And most of those are visual things that you can, or that can be printed and can be placed on a wall. And by the end of the day today, I will have a link to what I call the corporate art part, which is the projections.
But, you know, I love how this story, it comes full circle, because now you paint full time, and you still have your other technical kind of stuff. Which gives you more joy?
Oh, boy. It depends on TikTok, what day it is. TikTok. I know. And you've heard me say before, one day I'm blessed with being an artist. It's the greatest thing in the world. And the next day, I feel like I'm cursed because I'm an artist. But I want to encourage people, do creative things. And people say, I can't draw, I can't paint. So what? Yeah. I bet you can decorate a room in your house like nobody else. You can cook. You know, maybe you're a personal trainer. I can see how that could be a very creative thing. So there's just be creative, do that, have fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it is very artful. And the way you prepare a meal or, you know, keep your house or whatever. I mean, Mr. Boyd says, you know, I'm not creative. Well, you are, because you put words together as an attorney. You have to problem solve, right? And that's what we do as artists.
Very much so. Creativity, I think, in the United States, in my opinion, it's a very limited definition. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be expanded, because everybody I know is creative and good at something.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. That's what I really like to see, is people passionate about doing something. Doesn't have to be painting.
Well, listen, I know that you cultivated a lot of young folks at the Academy or at the Art Institute that really, you opened doors for them. You know, I think you've really turned them on to the joy of painting, the joy of illustration, the joy of making, you know?
I think when I teach, when I educate, I jokingly tell people, I'm on a sixth grade level. But that's not really too far from the truth, because I really like breaking things down.
Yeah.
Nothing is scary. It's all right there. And I really think anything can be learned.
Well, I love the next chapter in your life that involves me. We're going to go on tour with the guitar. You're going to play guitar and me, the ukulele.
You're going to do ukulele.
We've talked about it for years now. We might as well just pull the trigger.
And I'm going to sing the high harmony.
There you go.
With this voice. That's what I'll do. Just for you.
You know, I love you. I love you, Brent Watkinson. Thank you so much for coming in. Your website again?
BrentWatkinson.com.
Beautiful. And that winds up our program for this week. Warren Rosser, Ben Elvers, Lewis Kopp, Literacy Casey, Jillian Helm, John Teasdale, Brent Watkinson. Thank you all so much for coming in today and sharing your work, your talent, yourself with the community. And I want to invite folks to stay tuned next for Jeff Harshbarger, Jazz in the Afternoon at 1 o'clock. And thank you so much for tuning in today. Honey, I'm coming home.